Hello, today is Monday, April 15th, and welcome to episode 323 of Fault Lines, the National Security Institute's podcast that gets you quickly up to speed three times a week on the national security and foreign policy debates shaking up America. I'm NSI's Deputy Executive Director, Jessica Jones, and I'm joined today by NSI's Founder and Executive Director, I know the answer to this, Jamil Jaffer, and two of our favorite senior fellows, Morgan Vigna and Liz Munson. Okay, over the weekend, Iran launched one of the largest combined aerial attacks in recent history. You could not have missed this news. Over 300 drones and missiles were fired at Israel. Iran said the attack was in self-defense after airstrikes attributed to Israel killed senior Iranian military personnel in Syria early this month. Iran also said in a statement that the barrage wasn't intended as the opening phase of a new war, but was just punishment. They tried to close it down quickly. In a coordinated air defense operation, Israel, the U.S., the U.K., France, and Arab neighbors were able to intercept about 99% of Iran's missiles and drones. American, British, and Jordanian warplanes played an especially important role in downing them. In a bid to keep the conflict from growing, President Biden talked to Prime Minister Netanyahu this weekend and said that the U.S. wouldn't help Israel in an offensive strike on Iran, though he made it clear that the U.S. would always defend Israel. In his conversation, Biden also called it a time for, quotes, careful reflection. On Sunday, President Biden also convened leaders from the Group of Seven, and the UN Security Council was poised to hold an emergency meeting Sunday to discuss the attack. Israel's war cabinet met on Sunday to decide how to respond, but as of our recording, we're all kind of just waiting to see what happens. Okay, so Morgan, I'll go to you first. Iran's been kind of flagging for days that an aerial assault was coming. We didn't know the exact exactly what was going to happen, but we knew it was coming. And this really allowed, it seems, this really large coordinated response on the behalf of the U.S., Israel, and a number of allies and partners. I mean, do you take this attack more as theater, or was, what do you make of the flagging by Iran?
Sure. So I'll say that Israel's response to the attack by Iran, it was a huge win. I think Israel really was able to demonstrate three things. One, was able to put Iran's malign influence in the region into the spotlight. I think it is undeniable for anyone in the international community to now say that, Iran is not responsible for the proxy attacks throughout the region, whether it is the regime itself, or Lebanese Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, et cetera. Clearly, Iran is the orchestrator here. Next, I think we see a huge support for Israel, not only by the United States, but also by our Arab partners and our European partners in waging this robust defense. And then we also saw the strength of Israel's air defenses. Iron Dome, Arrow 3. I mean, these all worked perfectly. I mean, I think I'd say 99%. So not perfect, but 99% of projectiles were shot through.
Pretty darn good.
Yeah. Pretty close to perfection, right? Okay. We did see some casualties, but nevertheless, not as horrible as it could have been, right? I mean, we largely saw, Israelis in Jerusalem sipping coffee the next morning. So, I mean,
and at the beach the day before, if you saw some of the pictures,
right. So, Tel Aviv. Needless to say, they're built differently. Let's put it that way.
This is Iran's first direct military attack launched from Iranian territory since the revolution in 1979. Hezbollah stayed silent this weekend. I mean, what do we think, Morgan? You can answer this. I'll turn to you, Jamil. If not, what does an appropriate response either from Israel look like?
Okay, so I'll speak first and then we can go to Jamil. Look, I think what Iran really wanted to do was to reestablish and reassert itself in the region as a major military power. And what we saw on April 1st was Israel take out one of its most senior level IRGC commanders in Damascus. Iran felt it needed to respond with a lot of force. Clearly, it did. However, what we did see is as soon as Iran launched these strikes, we saw Iran very, very quickly say, okay, we're done. This is the end of the attack. We're done. And I think this really was an attempt to dissuade a counteroffensive, a retaliatory strike against Israel and provide an off-ramp for escalation. And thereby treat any further action that Israel takes or U.S. support for Israel's escalation as escalatory action. And thereby, Israel turns into the bad guy, right? However, it's unfortunate that President Biden really fell into the regime's hands here and came out saying that it was not going to support Israeli action against Iran. It's not to say that, you know, the United States won't continue to support arms and weapons and intelligence support, but clearly the administration has limited itself in any additional action.
Yeah, Jamil, what do you think of this off-ramp? It seems so generous of them to give after launching 300 missiles and drones.
Yeah, I mean, I think Morgan's exactly right. The Biden administration fell into the trap, but I think it was a trap that everyone could see coming. You could predict from a mile away. This was Iran's plan from the jump. And look, I just want you to think about, you know, Senator Rounds on Fox News yesterday said, what would we do if 300 missiles, ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, and drones launched in American territory, in American population centers? We would not let it simply go with, oh, well, we had really good missile defense. By the way, our missile defense isn't that good. And it wouldn't knock those, that meant the 99% down. But if we had, we wouldn't be just like, oh, well, it's fine. You just go ahead and go with it, right? I mean, that's crazy. And in fact, when we took out Qasem Soleimani, the Iranians knew better than to launch 300 missiles at us. They launched a handful. We did ultimately let it go at that because nobody was really hurt in those. And that's fine. But the situation here is, I think, fundamentally different. It's only because Israel's defense combined with the U.S. efforts and Jordanian efforts were successful that lots of people didn't die. Otherwise, tens of thousands would be dead. And that's what Iran, you know, could have teed up. And so I think that's part of the problem here. I think ultimately the right answer is for Israel to respond in a significant way, escalatory or not. Iranians only understand power, right? And if they're going to respond, then look, they want to pick a war. This is a war that Israel can and will win. And frankly, the United States should be behind them offensively this entire way. We've had enough soldiers killed by Iran and its proxies over the last decade and a half. Iran deserves a direct response from us, not just the Qasem Soleimani killing, but more. So frankly, if they're going to now make the new theory that they're going to start launching attacks against Israel from their own territory, well, they should expect to be hit on their own territory.
Yeah, Les, what do you take in the long term? To Jamil's point, the U.S. continues to play a role in coordinating between Israel, Arab neighbors, and, you know, European partners as well. You know, what does this look like? What does it look like long term in the region? And then speaking, aid to Israel is still ongoing. The conversation's still ongoing in Congress, right? We still haven't moved forward on that. So as our congressional guru, I'd like your take on that, too.
Yeah, Congress, go ahead and pass, particularly the House of Representatives, go ahead and pass the aid for Israel and Ukraine. That would be great if you just go ahead and do that. I think
nuanced take there.
Thank you very much. I think the long-term issue here, first of all, kudos to the Biden administration for putting together the Arab and European coalition to thwart the Iranian attack. Yes, I said that. Kudos to them. Good job. I think the understanding here is between Biden and Bibi, between President Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu, is we will defend you. We will put together a coalition of support for you in the Middle East and in Europe, which you did not have before, at least not in this way, with the understanding that you will not launch a massive retaliatory strike against Iran, for instance, taking out their nuclear facilities, and instead will do a very modest pinprick of a response in a few days. So the question is going to be, in the long term, what does the Biden administration and what does Bibi Netanyahu do with this new coalition of support? How does that impact the decisions on the ground in Gaza? And is this a potential way out of the larger conflagration? I'm not super optimistic about it, but I think that is the question we're going to be asking ourselves in a couple of weeks. And that's, by the way, in today's context, 2 weeks from now is the long term.
I know. I was about to say that the timeline here, Jamil.
I do think that's a really interesting concept. I'm not sure I buy this like secret squirrel plan between Bibi and Biden. I don't feel like they're getting along that well. That they have one, maybe it's possible, I suppose. But I do like the end result as you're playing it out, if in fact you're right. I will grant you that my sort of theory of the case is likely to escalate the situation. But frankly, the situation has been escalating for a long time because of Iran. And so this is an escalation by Israel. It's just a response to what's been happening to us and them for a long time. And frankly, in the last few months, we've been getting hit in the Red Sea over and over and over again, only because we've been good at defending ourselves that they haven't sunk an American destroyer in the Red Sea. So let's be real. I mean, the Iranians are not playing nice here, and they need to be kicked in the teeth.
Can I just add, I think the real issue here for the administration, are they going to use this coalition to put Iran back in a box with economic sanctions? Are we going to look at a real effort against the Houthis that actually leads to victory for the West? And are we going to start to see a military buildup in, for the United States? Because we need more defense spending in the long run. That's the real issue here, is our capability has been eroding for the last couple of decades, and that needs to turn around fast. I haven't seen the Biden administration talk about that at all.
Yeah, and Les, I'll just add here, the answer to all of those questions is probably no. Why? Because we have an election here in a matter of months. Right. And Biden does not want to have to deal with an escalation in the Middle East more so than we've already seen.
Yeah. Don't, and no, no, no.
Well, everyone just keep reading the headlines because they seem to be changing quite quickly. That's a wrap. Thanks to Devlin, Bernie, Claude Jennings, and the entire NSI team for their help in producing today's episode. Start off to what might be an exciting week here. Join us again on Wednesday, April 17th for another episode of Fault Lines, the National Security Institute's podcast that gets you smart fast on the national security and foreign policy debates shaking up America. We're on YouTube, so check out what we're wearing there. And if you like what you heard or saw, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe.